This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
That's it. I'm running everybody. California.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 29th, 2012, episode 477. Good morning, horse world.
All right, let's see if this plays. Taking bets?
Okay.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
It's really quiet.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I ride a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey.
Let's blame Nasty Old Isaac, why don't we?
It's probably hurricane-related, I'm sure.
Yep.
Well, we'd like to thank everybody for joining us here on a Wednesday, and just like to let you guys know, this is a big weekend going on in the horse world, because we've got Burley going on over in England with it. This is, for those who don't know, this is a huge four-star horse trial, and it's absolutely one of the most gorgeous settings in England, and they're so lucky to actually be having one that's not rained out. I'm sure the people in the Gulf Coast would understand that right now. But we've got Americans, Sinead Halpin, Allison Springer, Aaron Sylvester, Kate Hicks, Will Fodry, Marilyn Little Meredith, and Christy Nunnick are all on the entry list. So there's actually a lot on the line for Allison Springer as well. Now it's also tomorrow, actually, the Paralympic Games kick off today with their opening ceremonies, and tomorrow the equestrian portion of the competition does begin. 78 riders from 27 countries are competing on 77 horses all the way until next Wednesday. So we want to wish everybody good luck, but, you know, a little extra bump, boop, boop, for the Americans.
Yeah, I've been watching the pictures coming out of there. I'm friends with most of the ones that are on the team there, and they've been sending some fantastic
Bragger.
Pictures, and they are so excited to be there. They are just so excited. It's so cool to watch.
Oh, you're Facebook friends with them.
Yes, correct.
Okay, so you're not, like, going out on the weekends, because then you would just be bragging.
No. I have gone out with them, but that was a while back when we still lived in Lexington. They're a good group. It's a lot of fun. Good group.
Well, that's cool. Well, you definitely have a lot more knowledge on everything Paralympic because of your experience at the WEGs and everything. So definitely you'll be the go-to guy for any information about the Paralympics. But I'm excited.
Let me just qualify that, though, a little bit, Jamie. It's still dressage. I'm just saying. So you may not want to look to me for your commentary, but we'll be sure to report what other people more knowledgeable than us say.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good. Good trade. So, Jennifer, what do we have? I know we've got a busy show. What do we have on today's show?
On today's Wet and Wild Wednesday edition, Hittem's go-to OTTB guy, Eric Dirks, makes another auditory appearance today to relieve some of Jamie's retraining the racehorse stress, as well as the stress of others retraining OTTBs. He's got some great answers for Jamie's questions. Next up, the velvet voice of Victoria Spicer arrives via Scotland to highlight the horsey headlines from Europe. And the horse.com takes a cold, hard look at West Nile virus, also creating a lot of stress in the horse industry this year. And in honor of whoever proclaimed history repeats itself on this day in 2005, Hurricane Katrina made landfall over New Orleans, Louisiana.
And on that note, My Daily Winnie goes out to all of our friends and listeners on the Gulf Coast down there. If you haven't heard, which I'm sure most of you have by this point, but if you're just getting up on the West Coast, Isaac has made landfall, right, taking a dead shot at New Orleans. It came across just a little bit of land and has pretty much just stopped all forward progress. It's going like 1 or 2 miles an hour at this point and just raining on New Orleans. They are expecting in some places up to 2 feet, 24 inches of rain, and they're hoping that this thing starts to pick up speed and get the heck out. But at this point, it looks like it could take 12 to 24 hours for it to stop raining in New Orleans. And we all know what that means. Now, they put in a whole bunch of new pumping stations, and they have the largest pumping station in the world now built in New Orleans. But they said that the pumping stations are still only built to handle 1 inch of rain an hour. That's what they're handled. And right now it's raining inches an hour. So they're still hoping for the best in New Orleans. And the worst possible thing was that this is a pretty big storm. The worst possible thing that could have happened is that it stalled, you know, over the city. And that's pretty much what it's done. Now, we have friends and listeners down there that I've sent some messages out to this morning. That if they can give us a call and let us know what it's like, please do that. And I know some of them have lost power already. So that's what's going on. Now, another thing, Jamie, is this hit pretty hard. Isaac, you know, whacked southern Florida pretty hard with a ton of rain. And one of the horsey places in Florida, Wellington, got hit really hard. They had 14 inches of rain and some severe, severe flooding. And if you look at our Horses in the Morning Facebook page and scroll down, you'll actually see a picture of Wellington there, and you'll see all the paddocks where all the horses were and just totally flooded out. They've had major problems down there. Now, only about 20% of the horses that live in Florida and Wellington are there because that's their winter home. But they did have to evacuate a bunch of horses to some racetracks and some other places were taking in horses. And some people said their farms had 4 to 5 feet of water in the pastures. And it was just,
gosh,
it's bad. Yeah, there was one rescue place down there that she had 30-some horses, and they had 30 stalls in the barn, and the stalls have 4 feet of water in them now. They had to move the horses out of the rescue. So it's pretty bad down in Wellington, too. So our best to everybody on the Gulf Coast and Wellington. We missed it. It went right around Ocala. We had a little bit of rain, and that was pretty much it. So we were spared here in Ocala.
Wow, though. You know, this just goes to show, obviously, to have your evacuation plan in hand, especially when you live in a place that, you know, potentially is affected by hurricane season. You know, you've got to have a plan for hurricane, tornadoes, flooding, earthquakes, wherever you live in the world or in the country. You need to have a plan, you know, have a map of your area, plan your routes and alternate routes. And, you know, definitely prepare ahead of time, because when my mother and I actually did animal rescue for Hurricane Katrina, we went in with the trucks and trailers and supplies after Hurricane Katrina, just seeing, it's hard to even talk about the devastation that we saw and the fact that there were so many loose animals, be it of any vast kind of animal was loose. And trying to wrangle those, and you get heartbroken for the owners, and you also get mad because somebody left them behind. So it's a tough situation for anybody, no matter what side of it you're on. So please, everybody, have a plan and be safe. Obviously, you probably can't even listen to the show right now, but please be safe, please.
Yeah, did you see the picture I posted from Tammy Hoag, who is the famous author? You know, has written all those books.
Oh, my God.
She's also a dressage person, and she lives full-time in Wellington down there. And she took a picture outside the railing on her house in a place that doesn't normally have water. And I had to look close. I don't know if when you looked the first time you really saw what it was, but I had to look close. And she said, you know, take a look at the head on this bad boy. He's waiting out just outside the fence. And sure enough, you look close, and you see the largest, biggest-headed alligator I've ever seen in my life.
I'm going to have nightmares about this picture. She says actually that it's just outside of her barn. And it's like the flooding brought this alligator right up to the barn, and she said that he's waiting for a tasty chihuahua appetizer. Well, hopefully we'll float by before dinner. Oh, my God. I'm going to have nightmares. This is so terrifying to me. It's staring at her. She's so close to this alligator who's right outside of her barn.
Would you have taken that picture? Would you have taken that picture?
With a zoom lens? I wonder if they shot it. Like, you know, a lot of those people down there shoot those things. So this would be cause for me, I would think, to do something to kind of scare it away. Shoot it, something, it's in my yard. Ah! Awful.
All right, and your turn.
Well, sorry, Chad just walked up behind me and scared me to death. I didn't see you. So I screamed. Am I back to the door? Oh, I got to rearrange this office. My Daily Winnie. God, it just scared me to death. 6 o'clock in the morning. What's he doing up? All right. So my Daily Winnie goes out to Australian Olympic event rider Clayton Fredericks. Announced a couple of days ago that Team Fredericks is expanding its eventing business, and they are establishing a new training facility in Ocala, Florida. Glenn, Clayton,
be my neighbor.
Moved to Ocala. I
know. Be my neighbor.
Can you believe that?
I haven't heard where. I tried to figure out, and I haven't heard from anybody where exactly his property is going to be. But Buck Davidson's about 2 miles from our house here, where his property is. He comes down to in the winter. But yeah, it looks like we're going to have some Aussie neighbors.
Do you guys drive by a Buck's place? Like stalk
drive
by
it all the time. Actually, we drive all the time.
Like, is he out there? Is he riding? Can I see? Yeah. So Clayton Fredericksen, apparently, Clayton's gonna focus on the American market. It says while his wife Lucinda is gonna continue to operate from the training stables they have in the United Kingdom. So I guess they're going to bring a store down to Ocala as well, so we can now buy all of our Southern Star Saddlery stuff in Ocala. So I'm coming to visit as soon as they get down there.
Oh, terrific.
I'm not going to see you.
They have a child, so I can see why Lucinda's staying in England for the winter.
Yeah. Obviously, but no, well, it's really cool. I'm glad they're coming to the U.S. I mean, you know, anybody who can train with a very well-established rider and or coach, it's just going to improve the American riders. So it's great.
We wanted to also mention that Really Bad Ads is here on Friday. We are giving away. We had the guest on Monday, the lady who started Pink Pony Bakery. And she is giving away this whole big basket full of stuff. And Jamie, we didn't get a chance to tell you, but she sent some over for Beaker to try because we said, well, we're not giving away any of this unless Beaker likes it. He loves this Pink Pony Bakery stuff. She makes cupcakes and donuts and everything that could possibly, I think, be absolutely bad for your horse is just like Jennifer calls it Beaker crack because he loves this stuff. He will chase you down if you have some of this in your hand.
I am sure that the Pink Pony Bakery stuff is awesome, but I would like to point out that your horse would wolf down packing peanuts, okay? So
actually,
it's not like...
he doesn't like carrots or apples. He won't go for anything that's good for him.
Because it's healthy. He's like his
daddy. Got to have molasses. But no, this is good stuff. We're giving away a whole big basket full of it. She's sending you she has the little Chef Pinkerton as a stuffed animal. She's sending that along. And Rhonda, who listened to Monday's show, who's one of our listeners up in Canada, sent me a message on Facebook and said, I got that song, that Pink. This is actually a horse treat company that has a theme song done by a rock band in Los Angeles. And she said, I have that song in my head. And she said, I bet you Jamie would hate it. So, Jamie, saved it just for you to see how you like the Pink Pony Bakery song. Take a listen. See, what do you think, Jamie? I knew you'd love this song. It's right up your alley.
And this was Rhonda's idea? Yeah. Thanks, Rhonda. Oh, my God. Well, I hope their treats are better than their music.
They are. They're terrific stuff. So we'll be giving that away and trying to get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Get them in today.
Yeah, definitely. And again, you know, I was looking at horsenation.com, and they've got a ad over there that's like, oh, my gosh, this horse is just too good to be true. Let's remind everybody out there that if it is too good to be true, it's usually too good to be true. Like, it's not true. So they've got a picture of, like, this horse that's in a Western saddle tied to the fence with its bridle on, and they say, oh, this horse is a great jumper in schooling precinct, George. Really? Then why is it wearing a Western saddle tied to a fence? So let me just point out here that if it's too good to be true, and it's like $1,000. So,
well, you know what? Yeah, just, if this please. Horse is schooling precinct, George, in a Western saddle, you want to buy that sucker.
Did you see the picture?
No, I didn't see the picture.
Oh, go to horsenation.com. It's like the 8th story down. It's solid third level schooling pre-St. George. It jumps. It's quiet. It's got great manners. It's a registered Oldenburg. It looks like a 22-year-old quarter horse. So I think there's a little scam going on there. So, again, if you are horse shopping and you're looking through Craigslist, between sending us ads, watch out for scams, please. Hey, guess what my new horse comes in next week? It's your Sunday.
Oh, terrific.
It's Sunday. I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
I know. I saw her
The new guy,
post,
Robbie.
And I saw her post, one of our listeners, you got that from one of our listeners, and I saw her post. She's so excited that the horse is going to you, but not so excited because she absolutely loves this horse. So it's kind of a mixed blessing for her. Yeah.
Well,
but,
I would like to.
Speaking of which, your guest is ready. Maybe you could talk about training your new horse.
I know. Let's do it. Well, that one won't need any training. It's the one I currently have that needs the help. We've got expert off-the-track thoroughbred trainer Eric Dirks with us here on the show. Good morning, Eric.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. I know it's the East Coast for you. Are you getting any rain in North Carolina?
Just little sprinkles here and there. We could use a little bit more, though.
Oh, well, I'm sure it might be coming if the storm's going to move up the East Coast there. But, well, thank you again for joining us. So here's the deal, Eric, is I just got a horse off the track. I mean, straight off the racetrack. He'd been down for about, I think he'd been stopped racing 6 weeks ago, but they'd had him on the hot walker every day with the other horses for the last a month of that 6 weeks, and then he had 2 weeks doing nothing, and then he came to my farm. And I've just got some common kind of off the track thoroughbred questions for you, if you are willing and able to answer some of these. Does that sound good?
That sounds great.
Okay, let's just get cracking here because I'm gonna keep you busy. I think that, you know, what would you say the most common problem, training question is, or common problem is with an off-the-track thoroughbred?
Well, first off, the most common is behavior problems, or people ask about how do I get my horse's attention span. I think you've led up to this conversation really brilliantly because you just described the off-the-track thoroughbred's daily routine of going on a hot walker or leaving the stall, and immediately a jockey goes on and does their morning workout, or they just are in this regular routine. And then when they go to a new home, they're all of a sudden out of that routine, and something totally out of routine happens. So immediately the horse's attention goes up, and all they're doing is the caution flag is going up. One of the biggest things that I get asked is, how do we get our horses to calm down, or how do I get my horse's attention span? And this is not just for the off-the-track thoroughbred. This is for any horse. And we have to accept that they have different behavior patterns you're not going to be in control of. You cannot control their behavior patterns. We have to be more sympathetic of why they're doing what they're doing and ask yourself why first. So one of the biggest behavior things is attention. Let's say you bring your horse out to this big open arena. They're used to being in a shed row barn where they're being walked around indoors, and then they go off to the racetrack in a controlled environment, or let's say the round, or let's say the walker, and you take them out in this arena, and their attention span is like in a big world like this. Well, we have to be more sympathetic about.
Yeah, let me just paint the picture. It's more like you've attached a lead rope to a giraffe. Because that's, like, the first time I brought my horse, I mean, the head is up, and they're just, they're looking at everything but you. And I just told, I was like, someday you're going to notice me here. Hello?
Yeah.
So you're right.
I know. And I think if you, are more sympathetic to the horse instead of right away trying to control the attention, you're going to be way more successful. If you try to put control to the attention, which is usually the rider tries to put the head down, which is disastrous. Either way, place where you have the horse's head, the horse's attention span is looking how to get out of the situation. So I think the more freedom that you can allow within a more confined space, let's say on a lead line, there is only maybe 2-3 meters away from you, that is the confined space, I think that's where you're going to get their attention span. It's kind of a catch-22. You don't want to give them all the space in the world, and you don't want to put them in too tight of a space.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, so I started out with a little bit of groundwork, and I had the lunge line, and you know, you're right, there's a couple days of like, okay, I'm going to allow you to just look around, just whatever, as long as you know that I'm controlling your speed maybe and your direction. And that was basically it. Now, once you kind of start to get them to pay attention to you, which, by the way, I've noticed that off-the-track thoroughbreds are so not interested in treats, which is usually the way that I cheat to get their attention. And this horse has no food motivation whatsoever. So it's been a little bit more of a challenge. And, you know, a lot of people will use the technique of, like, just get a move in and they kind of get tired. Well, that doesn't work with thoroughbreds, off-the-track thoroughbreds either, because they don't get tired. They will run until they hurt themselves. So you have to come up with kind of different methods. So a question that I did have, sorry, go ahead.
And you're absolutely right. And I wanted to kind of reiterate on, let's say, a lead line or doing the groundwork, that it's not just giving them a free-for-all, it's giving them a job. And it's just like doing walk-trot transitions with the most minimal aid. And eventually they start listening to you and looking for the command. You may have to be firm at first, but then after a while you could use less and less of an aid. So you really have to listen to your horse, and then your horse will start listening back to you.
Yeah, I noticed, Eric, that the hardest thing to do on this horse was to walk him around the arena. There was just the second you would kind of let go of the reins, he wanted to kind of start jigging, get a little upset. But the second that I gave him something to do at the walk, like we're going to do a little counter bend, we're going to do a little circle around here. As long as I gave him something to do, his walk improved a little bit more. Instead of jigging, he would actually walk, but it wasn't for long periods of time. Now, the other question that I have, my arena is at the far end of my property. So I'm curious to know, what do you do to a horse when they start whinnying for everybody else in the barn?
Well, again, you have to look at the whinnying as a sympathetic approach. Why are they whinnying? Well, they're nervous, and they're nervous being by themselves. You brought up a good point about the arena as well. And to distract you from the horse whinnying, and instead of putting maybe earplugs in your own ears, you have to again, put the horse to some kind of job where they're going to start listening to you. And the most success I've found is, like, let's say you have your open arena. put some objects out there in your arena. Instead of just having one big empty space in the arena, find a great example is like a jump arena, that you have a bunch of jumps set up that you could circle around, something that is out there that you could circle around, and that will also help your circles. And as far as the horse winning goes, they're going to get over it. After a while, as you keep working with them and keep asking them to do a task, it will go away more and more. They're just looking for some kind of leader out there. And just give them a little pat instead of right away feeling like, will you just stop it, and getting angry. Because I think a lot of people, if we don't get an immediate reaction, we tend to throw our expectations ahead and get angry or more firm. And we need to be a little bit more sympathetic and relaxed and calm and read your horse. Let him get over it. And it'll take a little bit of time, and some horses longer than others, but they all come to look forward to work eventually.
Okay, so timing, time and patience seems to be the theme for these guys. Now, on a personal note, this is one thing that this horse happens to do, which is kind of a bizarre behavior that I've never seen before. And when I've ridden him alone a lot, and I teach lessons, so one of the things I like to do with any of my horses is they have to come out and be the sofa while I'm teaching. They have to learn patience and learn to stand still. Well, this horse, when I bring him out, his name is Edward, if another horse comes too close to him, he lunges at them, pins his ears and lunges at them like he's keeping him in line. I don't know what do you think that is, and what do you do about that?
Well, again, it's another behavior pattern of a horse. He's really kind of defending his territory, and he doesn't have much social skills at that point. So the more he gets exposed to that kind of stuff, that the horses are not going to be lunging back at him, the better. Mm-hmm. Keep your distance is my biggest thing. And, the more the horse is then in tune at the task at hand of doing what you want to do, the less he's going to be going after the other horses. So further along into the work program, as you get further along into the work program, I think they will start to accept being a little bit more in the group. But some of those behavior patterns, you're not going to get rid of, because some horses are a little bit more protective of their own space than others.
Okay, so keep my distance. Okay, got loud and clear, Eric. Well, I guess I think that once you get on them, and once you've got their attention, and once you're starting to be able to work them a little bit, I think the most challenging thing I hear and that I'm having is what I hear from other people that have off-the-track thoroughbreds is the elusive right lead. Why is the right lead so difficult for these guys, and what do you do?
Well, going to the right is a little bit unnatural for all horses, because I believe they lie in the womb to the left. If you ever look at horses born, they all look like they're bending to the left. And so the way I look at that task at hand, it's more balance versus behavior. So you have to think of what's going to make this horse even on both sides. Just like people, we all push off of one leg more stronger than the other. We're all either right-handed or left-handed. So when horses are born out of the womb, most horses push off of one leg stronger than the other. That's why horses have their strong side and their weak side. So to ease up the task at getting the correct lead, you want to make sure that the horse can bend easily on both directions. So I think of when I'm going to the right, they could stretch the left side of their body just as easy as the right side of their body. So the better the bend, the easier you're going to be able to pick up that right lead canter. So instead of getting infatuated with the right lead, do the homework first, the walk and the trot, and getting them bending both directions so they're more limber and stay in balance, so the white lead's a little bit easier to pick up.
Oh, my gosh. Can I just, like, reach through this microphone and give you a big hug right now? Because I've got to tell you that I've asked several people this, and what does everybody say? Oh, just bend him to the left and kick him, and he'll have to pick up his right lead. But to me, it's like, why would I teach him an incorrect way to do it before I want to teach him a correct way?
Well, you brought up a good point, because you're almost scaring them into being off balance to catch his right lead. And what does that do to your horse's, let's say, freak out session, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, and so having heard that several times, I thought, well, one time I was like, well, let me just try this. And I go to bend him to the left while going to the right, and he just got so off balance, I just quit. I'm like, I'm not doing that. So my, what I kind of do is, okay, and I've taught him the voice commands on the ground, and I ask him for the canter, and if he picks up the left lead, I don't punish him because I ask him to canter, but we just stop and we do it again. So my way I do it is like left lead, left lead, left lead, and I'm nope, 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 and then the right lead is, oh my God, you're such a good boy, I love you, you're so good, and it's like a big party, you know. I don't know if he responds to that or not, but.
And sometimes you do have to, you know, they will feel a little chased in the right lead can, and sometimes you just got to get them confidence that they could pick up the right lead, and you have to push yourself through it. But a lot of all these myths, training myths of off-the-track thoroughbreds and their behavior patterns are all linked to balance and nervous energy. And most of the nervous energy comes from either they don't know their job, and part of not knowing their job is not knowing how to balance. They use a whole different segment of muscles on the track, and they're taught to run fast at a stretched-out outline. What we're teaching them to do is to slow down their brain, think about where their feet at, and shorten their outline. So basically it's like telling a person to lower their center of gravity and carry weight into something that's not very natural for the horse, and that's to carry a rider.
Eric, will you please write a book? Will you please write the off-the-track thoroughbred training manual? Because what you're saying makes so much sense, and it is so smart. Do your homework. Get them confident. Give them a job. Get them balanced. And once you have all that, it seems like everything kind of will fall into place after that. So, again, after the last time we spoke, I started, you told me how important it was for that 20 minutes before you ride of the grooming and the spending time with them. And I've really taken a lot more time to do that, to groom them and, you know, brush their mane and kind of spend time with them. And I really feel like it has made a big difference in the relationship that I have with all the horses. So I want to thank you for that. And then going in and working on their balance and just giving them a job, I feel much more confident going ahead in my training thanks to you. So, yes, write that book, Eric. Come on.
I certainly will. And I'd like to add on to that briefly with the grooming. It really gets the people in the right frame of mind, too, not to go attacking their horse with any expectations, to slow down and listen to their horse with sympathy and problem solve. If you look at a problem long enough, you'll be able to solve it.
Eric, I think a better idea even would be, instead of writing a book, why don't you know the show Mythbusters? You could do Equine Mythbusters.
That's a good one.
You and Jamie could be out there blowing the horses.
I think that
would
be the title of my book.
Yes. There we go. Perfect.
Probably less guns and less dynamite, but, you know.
Thank you.
Now, Eric, any chance that you're going to be doing any clinics over on the west side of the country? I know you're doing a ton of them. Let's see. You've got clinics scheduled.
I've got one in Kentucky coming up, Lexington, Kentucky, and a couple that are scheduled in Wisconsin. But, yeah, if anyone wants me out west, especially during the winter season in California, I'd love to come out there.
Yeah, Arizona in the winter is a nice place, so I'll put in a request to my local a fencing group here. Well, if anybody wants to go learn more about Eric, his training philosophy, horses he has for sale, show schedule, clinic schedule, it's all on ericdirks.com. And, of course, Eric, we're going to link to that on our Facebook page right now. But I just can't thank you enough for joining us, and I hope you'll come back on next month and answer my next slew of questions to train the horse.
Well, thank you very much. In the next couple of days, I'm going to put under the training in my website, I will have the first couple of videos of the trainer's challenge of what we just talked about as far as getting your horse's attention.
Perfect, perfect. And of course, you know, you did win the Off the Track Thoroughbred Training Challenge. So you know what you're talking about. You're proven successful, and I just appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Eric.
All right, Eric. We'll talk to you next month.
Well, there you go.
Whether you like it or not, really, because I'm just going to call him anyway, because I'll have another slew of questions.
So now by tomorrow, your horse is going to be fine, right?
He should be, yes. Now, well, I got to say that, you know, talking to Eric last time, I've really taken some extra time on the ground with them grooming and spend, you know, usually I'm like, okay, let's go, throw the saddle on. We got to get out there. Got to do this because I got another horse. Now I'm slowing down and taking my time. And I really feel like it's made a difference to all the horses, not just the Off the Track Thoroughbred, just to Jet and to all of them. And then I hated the fact that everybody tells me when you want to pick up the right lead, bend them to the left. Why would I teach them the wrong way to do it just so I can throw them off balance and get it? So I appreciate what he said in that aspect as well. It's like, no, get them to bend and get them soft and get them supple, and then you can move forward. I love it. He's fantastic.
Well, terrific. Speaking of fantastic, our next guest is as well, and we have the lovely Victoria Spicer, who I think is not in England right now, but might be in Scotland, according to her Facebook page.
I am indeed in Scotland, yes, very well spotted.
And I'll tell you what, Victoria,
cool.
I saw yesterday that you took a long hike. Oh, did we lose her?
You've come back. You lost me for a second.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
I just saw yesterday on your Facebook page that you took a long hike up a hill.
I did. That's the hill behind the fields at home, and it didn't take me too long, about 20 minutes to reach the summit, but it took me a lot longer to catch my breath afterwards.
So are you heading home?
I'm heading back down to London today, so yes, as soon as I've done the show, I'm going to be hitting the road for a nice 8-hour drive from one country to another.
Terrific. And are you guys covering the para?
We are indeed. We'll be doing daily web reports, and we have press accreditation, so we're going to go and watch some of the action. We're kind of splitting up a little bit because Jenny Rudel, who you've spoken to before, who's our main presenter, she's off to Burley Horse Trials this weekend, so I'm holding the fort with the Paralympics. Too much going on at once. All this great horsey action.
Yeah, you guys do have a lot going on over there this weekend. Blenheim, I think, was that this past weekend, or is that coming up this weekend too?
Blenheim's coming up in the middle of the month, so yes, we've got a little while to wait.
There you go. So what else is going on over there at Horse and Country TV?
Well, we're amid all the Paralympic and Burley preparations. We've had some good stories on the website, including one about the person who was chosen to light the Paralympic cauldron, which is Claire Lomas, an event rider who was paralyzed a few years ago in a cross-country fall. And she, as you know, we've covered her quite a bit in Horse and Country's website because she's a remarkable person. And earlier this year, she walked the entire length of the London Marathon course, all 26.2 miles, wearing a bionic robot suit, and it took her 16 days to do it. And it's a real, you know, just an amazing achievement and a feat of a triumph over adversity. And so I think she's a brilliant person to light the Paralympic cauldron and get the whole thing underway.
Definitely, definitely. And we've been kind of following her through you guys over here. And that starts tonight, isn't it, the opening ceremony tonight?
It is indeed, and then the dressage starts tomorrow morning, so not very long to wait at all.
Terrific, and you're looking, I mean, you guys are looking at probably one of the best teams in the world with the British team.
We are. I mean, we've been really, really strong in the past. What's going to be interesting this year is that there's an Austrian rider who has hit the top of the world rankings in grade, I think it's grade 1B, which is what Lee Pearson rides in. And Lee's always dominated in para dressage, but just recently he's recovered from a very serious accident and he fell off and hurt his back, and he's been off the scene for a little while. So it's not going to be a walkover by any means, and there's a bit of a fight, I think, on our hands, a challenge between Lee and this new rider who's at the top of the rankings. I think his name is Pepo or something unusual, but yes, he's one to look out for.
And then I also noticed on your website something that we failed to cover here. We talked a lot about it last year, and Janie, we didn't cover the Mongol race, the longest race in the world in Mongolia, and apparently two Irish riders won.
They did, yes. An Irish jockey called Donald Fahy took the lead, and Richie Caloran was second. So it just goes to show how tough and fit these jockeys are, that they're racing, you know, over 3 miles every single day, and they step up to the longest horse race in the world, and they still win.
It was 1,000 kilometers, which is like 500-600 miles. Amazing. It's a tough race, and you're riding their horses. It's not like you're riding your own horses either.
Yeah, you have to just, and you swap horses a lot of the time, so it's not like you can either be drawn a good one. They can only run a certain distance, and so they have to swap over and get a new horse every certain amount of miles.
And it's actually a race that sort of was like our Pony Express. We reenact that every year. But this was their Pony Express in Mongolia. It was how the horse messengers of the time during Genghis Khan actually got the messages to each other, was doing this ride.
Yes, indeed. So it's very interesting. But I think it's quite a grueling, tough race. And to even be considered to take part, you have to be a very experienced rider.
You guys do have a cool job over there. You know,
I think we should get to go on the Mongolian Derby. But then I'm still.
Wait a minute. You just said you got tired to 20 minutes walking out to the top of the hill and back. Okay, so you're going to need to exercise a little first.
It's a big hill. What can I say? It's steep.
I did see pictures of it. It was steep. I'm just kidding. So what else?
Well, talking of long rides, so we've had the FEI World Endurance Championships, which was won by Sheikh Mohammed. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with him over there, but he is married to Princess Haya, who's obviously the head of the FEI. And he is one of the most prolific people in racing. And actually, I think if it hadn't been for his support, British racing wouldn't be in the state it's currently in. He's a massive owner. He's very big bloodstock breeder. And he's not averse to getting on a horse and winning a race himself. So, yes, he's the winner of the FEI World Endurance Championships.
We got to see him when he was over here at the World Equestrian Games in 2010, and his son, I believe, too. And I think his son came in, was it his son came in second? Or it was a member of his team came in second and third.
Yes.
And I actually read all those names, Jamie. You'd be so proud of me. I did all of those names all by myself on Monday, and I don't even think I screwed them up too bad.
Yeah, right.
So, well, that's great. You guys certainly have had a busy year. Next year you're going to go, there's nothing to do here in England.
I know. We need to have a vintage badminton, I think, to set us up. And just a year without cancellations would be good.
Yeah.
We can get back to normal. And it's the European Championships next year, so I presume. So hopefully we'll have some action on that front.
Terrific. And of course, you can find all of the good stuff, the videos and everything, at horseandcountry.tv, horseandcountry.tv. Their programming is also available here on HRTV in the United States. Some of your programming is available here.
Indeed,
and you're on in England where? What?
On Sky 280.
Sky 280. All right. Yes. Very good. Well, thank you for taking time out of your vacation schedule to talk to us.
My pleasure. It's just a working trip home, so not a problem.
Well,
working
you have
trip
a,
home, please.
He's in Scotland, so maybe could you have a beer or two for us while you're there?
That would be good, but I'm not sure that'll help with the 8-hour drive. So I'll have a very famous Scottish soft drink called Arran Brew, and if you ever come to Scotland, you must have an Arran Brew. It's the ultimate cure for everything in the world. So
okay.
There you go. There's my advice.
Terrific.
Scottish
well,
soda
thanks.
Called Arran Brew. I'll figure that out. I'll figure out how to spell that.
It's spelled IRNBRU. I don't know why. I don't know what it's made of, but it's bright orange. And as I say, if you drink it, you'll be able to do anything in the world.
Oh,
I'm not
well,
sponsored
cool.
by Arran Brew.
Oh,
thank you,
well,
Victoria.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. See you next week.
All right. Bye.
All right,
okay,
look it up. It is
that.
Called, I did, it's on Wikipedia. It's Arran Brew. It's a Scottish carbonated soft drink. Scotland's other national drink. I wonder, oh, whiskey's the first. and it says here it's
oh
made
my gosh.
Of the
Lord.
What?
Do a Google image search for it. I think I can post this picture. I don't know. I'll post this picture on our Facebook page, and you can immediately delete it if you feel like you need to. Let's see. Desktop. I'm going to save that. Talk amongst yourselves while I post this on our Facebook page. The picture of Arran Brew.
I see which one you're going to post. You better put an explanation.
Oh, my.
You better explain.
Apparently, it will cure everything. It'll keep you alive for a very long time.
That's funny.
Wow.
Hey, we have a caller here calling from from Michelle from Wright Lead Equestrian Center in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Down there in hurricane territory, she is having a little visitor named Isaac right now. Let's get a live report from down there. Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Glenn. Hey, Jamie.
How are you?
Hey,
how's it going?
Girl. It's good. It's just starting to rain a little bit. The wind's really picked up. Power's starting to go off in the surrounding areas.
Now, you're a little – how far north of New Orleans are you?
We, on I-10, are about an hour from New Orleans.
So this hit last night in the middle of the night in New Orleans, and you're mm-hmm. just starting to feel it now. That's how slow mm-hmm. this thing is going. It's moving at all.
Oh, my God. This thing is crawling. It is so slow. We should have been done with it a long time ago, and it's going to be a long event.
And, that, you know, obviously there's a concern for New Orleans because of what happened there in Katrina,
exactly.
But you also have a levee not too far from your farm, right, where the horses
mm-hmm.
are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're 4/10 of a mile from the levee here at the farm. Really, I don't think there's going to be any problem with the levee here. We're so far in. There's no chance of storm surge or anything coming up the river at this point, not where we are.
I remember I saw pictures, was it last year, that the water almost topped the levee there?
With the flood, yeah. Yeah, with Ricky and I standing right there at the top of the levee, and you could see all the water right next to us.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I noticed you painted your horses. What kind of paint did you use? You painted the phone numbers and everything on your horses.
We did. We just went to the livestock or to the feed store and got some livestock markers. They come in different colors. And I think they're petroleum-based. They smell like petroleum to me, and they're sticky. And once you get them on, we're going to have colored saddle pads for a while. They stay on pretty well. So we put numbers on both sides, put a breakaway halter or a leather halter on everybody. A fly mask on those that had them, and front boots on some of them. Some of them, the older horses got boots all the way around, and bell boots, and we're ready.
All right. Well, we wish you the best of luck and everybody down there. Hopefully you'll be safe, and New Orleans, the city, will be as well. We don't need a repeat of that again.
Oh, no. And we've got some friends here that have evacuated with us, so they've been out helping me feed and get ready, and So we're just keeping everybody's mind off of everything and doing what needs to be done at the time.
All right. Well, the best to the whole gang there at Wright Lead Equestrian Center.
Thanks, y'all.
Hang in there, girl.
You know, you saw the aftermath of what happened after Katrina. You went because you were down there, and you know I've been involved with the Red Cross for many years and seen a lot of those kinds of situations. And it just doesn't get any easier, you know, every single time. And you know, the one thing we do forget about a lot of times, because the press tends to want to talk about wind speeds. You know, the wind is 100, the wind's 120. It's the flooding mm-hmm. that causes the most damage in most of these cases. It's the flooding that causes the damage. So, you know, 20 inches of rain in one day is not good, wherever you live.
No, yeah. Absolutely. So, thoughts and prayers with all those guys, man. It just to be sitting in the middle of that, poor Michelle, you know. And I think that it adds to it when you have horses, without a doubt. Because, you know, like just living here in Arizona, when it starts to really, really rain, everybody here is like, oh, my God, it's raining. It's awesome. And I'm like, oh, my stalls are flooding. You know, like, because there's nowhere for the water to go, so it just goes right into the barn because it never rains here. So I think when you have horses, it definitely adds to the stress level of whatever natural disaster is going on. So poor Michelle and all those guys down there. I mean, with or without animals, it's just a tough situation.
Well, we wish them all the best of luck. And, of course, one of the good things that's going to come out of this is it's supposed to head right up the middle of the country where the drought is happening. So they will hopefully get a little dousing in the middle of the country where it's much needed. Well, we're going to take a break for our song. And right after the song,
you can look
before
at the
we
picture.
Go. Look
I
at posted the picture.
It.
We'll have to take a look. Jennifer will have to. She's our censor. She's going to have to look at it and decide if she wants to take it down.
That's awesome. It's awesome.
Was it the one? Oh, it wasn't the one I was expecting, actually. I saw the one with the gorilla.
Oh,
you
no,
didn't
this
see
is
that
better.
One. We're going to be back. I got to tell you, Jamie, about this guy who also bets on horses by name alone and won $500,000. We'll get to that right after we talk about our sponsor today is Field Guardian. Field Guardian, actually, their contract is running out. This is the last week they're advertising. We just want to take this opportunity to thank them so much for everything that they have done and their support of the Horses in the Morning show. Also, you know, obviously we have our Field Guardian fence out back, and it has been surviving quite well. We had a large branch. Hit it the other day. And just bounced right off. You know, we have the tape, the electrical tape fencing, and it is rated to 900 pounds. So, you know, if you have, you'd have to have a pretty good sized branch that's going to do anything to it. Probably the insulators would come off first. So we highly, highly, highly recommend Field Guardian Fence. You can find them at fieldguardian.com. And we just want to thank them for all of their support of Horses in the Morning. If you need some electric fence of any kind or a charger or insulators or anything, check them out at fieldguardian.com. And now I thought of what song could I play today. Templeton Thompson's song, Wishing You Wings, came to mind for all of those people on the Gulf Coast who are probably wishing they had some right now.
Learn to fly on the wings.
And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, and that was Wishing You Wings by Templeton Thompson. And again, an educational day here on Horses in the Morning as usual, but what do you think about my picture? Have you seen it now?
Yes, I saw it. Is that actually their website? Kind of looks like the homepage of their website.
I don't know. I just Google image. Be careful when you hit images, when you Google anything. But I just Google imaged it, and that's what came up. And I thought, well, what a great advertisement for, you know, this drink will make you live long and happy and in love.
And apparently get naked.
And naked. So for those who don't know, for those who aren't in front of their Facebook page right now, it is a picture. If you just Google Iron Brew and hit images, you come up with this lovely picture of a happy couple. Looks like they're running into the ocean, and they're probably in their 70s, and they're naked.
So, well, the way Victoria was saying that, I thought, wow, she's being very mysterious about what this drink does, you know? Now we know.
Yeah, we need to tag her in this picture, and so this is what you did. This is what you've done to us.
Apparently, everybody in Scotland drinks this and just runs around naked. So,
sounds good to me, though. Live long and run naked.
Hey, there's this guy that's going to be able to make a trip or two to Scotland. Hey, let me read this story to you. A Southern California man, supposedly, this is coming off a blog now, won nearly $500,000 on Thursday betting on horses online. According to the Twin Spires blog, wow. Some dude hit multiple bets on Thursday, turning $146 into $495,000. And did it get this by picking horses based on what? The Glen
Method. Previous work, bloodlines, speed ratings.
Nope.
Any of those?
Nope.
Past performances, history, confirmation of the horse, parents.
Nope.
None of those things?
Nope.
Oh, God. The Glenway is picking them.
Based on their names. Yep. Yep, that's how he did it. He says, the way I play horses is by name. I don't care about odds. I play names I like. The long shot who led me to getting this whole pot was Zimmer. When I saw his name, I said, that's a pretty cool name. Normally, I just go with names, and if I like it, I'll play it. But when I saw Mike Smith was riding Zimmer, I knew I had to include this horse. Now, the blogger wasn't too convinced. He says, right, this sounds like the perfect story to put on a gambling website to lure people into making deposits, but whatever. As someone who spent the last two weekends not winning a single race at Saratoga, I want this guy to know he can go screw himself.
Ah, exactly. This is the kind of thing you're like, man, maybe I'll just start playing. I'll go on there and pick the names. And then, Glenn, did you go ahead and log on to Twin Spires and get yourself an account after reading that?
Oh, not yet. I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, you can do it after the show, I'm sure. That's fantastic. Well, I just want to tell you, Saratoga, they make mention of Saratoga. Can I just tell you, you posted the picture online, how amazingly beautiful Santa Anita Racetrack is? I went there on the way home from L.A.
Okay.
Yeah, I know posted the picture, but it was closed. Actually, the racetrack was closed, and we get to the I didn't know if there was racing. I don't know anything about the schedule for Santa Anita. I do know they're hosting the Breeders' Cup this year, so it's within driving distance of me. So I was going to think, okay, maybe we'll go see a race. And it was like maybe 11, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, so I knew it wasn't probably started yet, but it was going to be starting soon. Chad's like, well, okay, we'll do whatever. I don't care. So we drive to Santa Anita. We're pulling into the gates, and they're closed. I'm like, well, that's a bummer. Like, there's not one car in the parking lot. So I'm like, well, just drive up. Let's get close. I'll take a picture. So we drive up to the gates of the Santa Anita, and there's like the guard desk, you know, and this guy comes out and he's like, can I help you? And I'm like, yeah, I was wondering if we could just walk around and look around and stuff. And I know there's no racing. He's like, well, we're closed today, ma'am. And my husband goes, but we drove all the way from Phoenix, sir. And he's like, you drove all the way from Phoenix to here? And Chad's like, uh-huh. And so he's like, well, all right, come on in. Here you go. Come on in. You walk around, take pictures. Everybody there was so nice. We're like the only two people walking around Santa Anita Racetrack. It is gorgeous. The mountains are in the background. I walked out onto the grandstands and see the mountains in the back and the famous Santa Anita picture, you know, and the bushes. And it was absolutely gorgeous. And to see the statue of John Henry and see the statue of Seabiscuit, it was really, really cool. And as we left, the guy and the at the gate, we were leaving, we stopped by, and I'm like, okay, thank you, just want to stop and say thanks. And he's like, oh, wait here. And he hands me a poster of Zenyatta. I mean, come on. Yes, he gave me a poster of Zenyatta with Mike Smith. That's what made me think of this story, Mike Smith, on Zenyatta, and then another poster of Zenyatta and her baby. How awesome is that?
That's nice.
And Chad's like, you have no idea what day you just made for this girl. He's like, he even has a dog named Zenyatta. He's like, oh, my God, that's great. So people, big shout out to the nice gentleman at the gate. If you ever want to get into Santa Anita when they're closed, just tell him you drove from Phoenix. I'll let you in.
That wasn't technically a lie because you did drive from Phoenix.
Yeah, it was just a couple of days before, and we were driving to Phoenix when we left. So we're going home. See you later. We drove all the way out here. We're going home.
Okay, great. Terrific. Are they hanging up right above your microphone? Are they hanging up on the wall?
They're actually at the frame shop right now, and they're going to get custom framing. No. No. I'm going to go to Walmart and see if any of them fit a frame. That's where I do my pictures.
All right, let's go on to thehorse.com.
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
And it's that time again where we get to learn a little bit about horses and get ourselves totally paranoid about things that we have to worry about now with our horse.
And today we're talking about West Nile virus. And I have to tell you, last night I went out to groom my horses and I won. I'm like, that's a mosquito bite. Oh, he's getting eaten alive. It's West Nile virus time. But my horse is vaccinated, so hopefully he's protected.
Well, and that before we get into it, I have a question for Dr. Jones, because we're actually in our little mosquito season here in Arizona because I live on irrigated horse property, and I always forget, oh my gosh, we're going to get mosquitoes. And so the mosquitoes started about 2 weeks ago, and I vaccinated all my horses. They got their West Nile shots about 3 weeks ago. So is there like a period of incubation for the vaccine, or does it go to work immediately?
Well, it depends on if your horse has been vaccinated previously. They already have what we call the antigen or the response to the vaccine in their body, so it just boosts that up on a tremendous level quickly.
Okay.
So, but if it's been lagged for quite some time, yes, you may have a couple days up to a week before you actually get a high enough titer level. We don't know what that level is in the horses, but if you stay on top of your boosters relatively within, I'd say, you know, a month or so, you're doing okay. But if you're like a year out, and, you know, you've been really dragging your feet, you might have some longer period before it will boost it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, and so let's go ahead and go back to the beginning of West Nile, because I was looking at this date. It was 1999 when it started. It seems like it was just yesterday when we first heard West Nile virus. How did West Nile virus get its start in the U.S.?
It came in through birds, and it came in from Europe. Actually, the first reported case was actually in a human in New York, and they tried to figure out where that case came from. The person themselves did not come from the Europe and brought it in. It came in actually with a bunch of birds that came in, and so they think it was somehow transmitted, you know, from the birds then, of course, to the mosquito to the human. And that's when they first realized in 99 that we've got a problem of West Nile has now crossed the border and started, you know, looking out for it. And by that time, it had spread fairly quickly in the New England area, the northeastern area.
And I at the time was in the Seattle area, and so we just watched this come, the maps, the West Nile virus maps, come closer and closer and closer until it made it all the way to the West Coast. But fortunately, we, you know, had a vaccine for it, and hopefully our horses are vaccinated. But it's, you mentioned the birds and the mosquitoes, and humans get it also. What are the clinical signs in horses of West Nile virus?
Well, the clinical signs can be varied. Some horses will just be a little bit off, kind of like having the flu. And so they may not eat. They may be febrile. They may not. The difference with West Nile and encephalitis, they usually have a fever right off the bat. But in West Nile, they may not have that fever right away. But they may just be lethargic without a fever, not really wanting to eat, not really wanting to do much. And they could also be as bad as right off the bat, they're walking ataxic as if they're drunk. They have muscle twitching, weakness in the limbs, that kind of thing. The examples I have is most of the cases I saw were flu-like symptoms initially, and the ataxia and neurologic signs showed up a couple days into it. One of my cases was an older horse who was actually vaccinated but lived in Mosquito Haven, and this vaccinated older horse had a lameness that she had me come out for, and it was a weakness in the hind limb, you know, just like a short stride in the hind limb, and we thought, well, this is a lameness. The next day she called and said, and she had told me he had fallen into the fence like a day or two earlier, but she didn't say he was ataxic falling in the fence. We didn't put two and two together. I asked her, had he been vaccinated? She said yes. So we continued on. The next day he went down and couldn't get up, and then, of course, that was his demise. We tried to treat him for about 3 days, and she called it quits at that point, which was probably the best thing for him. But it can be as simple as just a weakness of a hind limb and looking like almost like a lameness.
And what other diseases can it be mistaken for?
Well, like I said, encephalitis is our number one that we put up there. Anytime you have any kind of neurologic issue, you'll always have to think about rabies, too, because they can transmit it to the humans. So because of our requirement as being, you know, the professionals to protect humans in our world, we protect the horses, too, but as veterinarians, worldwide, we also have to watch out for the diseases that cross from animals to humans, and you know, family members of stuff like that. Don't put your hands in their mouth. Don't get in contact with the saliva, because that will carry the rabies virus. So you've got the encephalitis is the number one, the West Nile, rabies, EPM. Those are all put very high on our rule out list as veterinarians when we see an ataxic horse.
Mm-hmm. And so once you are suspecting West Nile virus, how do you confirm that the horse actually has the disease?
They confirm it by blood levels, and they'd like to get spinal taps as well, but the blood levels seem to be very accurate, and they're happy with titers in the blood compared to the normal parameters. The usually we do the spinal taps because the horse is down and can't get up, and we're able to pull it very easily then, but most of the time we pull it off of the blood levels.
And so the horse has it, it's confirmed. How do we go about treating horses with West Nile virus?
I highly recommend aggressive treatment. There is a 30% chance, and I'm sure this is a question you're going to ask me down the line, 30% chance to 40% chance of horses that will die from West Nile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it is a good idea to treat them because you have a 60 to 70% chance of saving your horse. That's better than 50. That's good. I highly recommend that people would hospitalize these horses in case they do go down, because they have usually means of holding these horses up or flipping them over, and the 24-hour intensive care, supportive care on these horses is paramount. So that means if the horse goes down, you're going to have bed sores, you're going to have maybe them banging their head against your stall or the floor or even the ground and causing abrasions on the head. They can put helmets on these horses at these facilities. So I very much recommend that these horses go to a hospital and get intensive care treatment. What they'll usually do is they hit them with anti-inflammatories to decrease the inflammation in the brain and spinal cord area, because that's causing a lot of the problems, because the virus gets in there and it's foreign, so the body's trying to attack it, and it's dumping a bunch of proteins and other products in there to fight the virus, and that adds more fluid around the spinal cord and around the brain. Every time the blood goes in and leaves things behind, it leaves things behind in a space that's so confined already that they're putting pressure on that area, as well as the bug itself is causing damage to those areas of the spinal cord and the brain too. So you've got to combat both of those things. You've got to try to take care of the inflammation. As far as taking care of the virus, there is no good antiviral drug for the virus. It's more the systemic care. So for anti-inflammatories, yes, we use steroids, heavy, heavy steroids. We use DMSO or mannitol to decrease the swelling in the brain and the spinal cord area, mostly DMSO. And then they will do your usual bute or banamines for the fever and the other pain-related issues that come with it. Some places are big on giving vitamin E for the nervous system, to help out the nervous system. Another drug called pentoxifilin is another good anti-inflammatory drug. So these are all things that we aggressively start to treat them with. I'll usually dose them up, get them on a trailer, and send them and tell the hospital, this is what I gave, so that the anti-inflammatories can start kicking in and help the horse out. By the time they get there, they can just start doing more supportive care. They may have to give them fluids because they may be so recumbent and not know that they're supposed to be drinking and urinating, and so trying to keep their systems alive, they may be put on fluids.
And so
Dr.
you mentioned...
Jones, Michelle, sorry, let me jump in here real quick. I have a question. So you said that there's a greater than 60% chance that they will survive, so go ahead and treat them. What is the horse like after all of this? Like, you know, it's certain diseases, you treat them and the horse is kind of either forever lame or forever ataxic, anything like that, or do they go back to normal if you're able to save them?
The information we have out there is phenomenal, to believe it or not. There's no flat answer for that to say, yeah, your horse will be perfectly sound and perfectly fine once they survive. There may be, like you said, a lameness or an ataxia or a weakness in that limb that might make you a little hesitant to ride them in the future, but you don't know until you get beyond the treatment. There was one particular horse I remember at a surgical facility they treated during the outbreak in 99, before the vaccine came out, and that horse went for colic surgery. Oh, I don't know. Of course, he improved and went back to riding and showing, and then had colic, I don't know, 2-3 years later, did colic surgery. They euthanized on the table, the surgical table, for this horse because it was a bad colic, and when they did, they opted for a necropsy or an autopsy, and they actually looked at the brain, and the brain was so riddled with necrotic areas from the virus They couldn't believe the horse was still able to show and work. So there's a lot of compensation that goes on in our animals, our horses. You give them a little credit to get around this bad virus. And again, so you really can't say, wow, it really attacked their brain and you'll never ride that horse again. You'd be surprised.
So now that you say that the brain had was damaged, it's just awful. So how do we prevent this from happening?
The prevention is, you know, the ideal thing is vaccine. I mean, the vaccine has proven itself. There was a rush to get it done in 99. They funded it heavily. They got it out there to get the horses vaccinated for it as soon as possible once it finally got out. And you, Michelle, you were lucky. Those people in New England and the Northeast did not have the vaccine and lost many horses due to the fact they didn't have the vaccine. By the time it hit Florida for us, we had the vaccine in hand and we were able to keep our numbers down. The only numbers we saw were the aged horse, like I said, that was standing out in Mosquito Haven. No matter how much I would have vaccinated that horse, it probably couldn't have prompted enough of an immune response to protect itself from the inundation of the mosquitoes. There's only so much protection it could fight. So vaccine is it's absolutely necessary. Standing water, we're going to have a lot of that with this tropical storm hurricane. People are going to have a lot of standing water now, and those are the areas that are hit, as Louisiana and Texas and Alabama. They're all being hit with West Nile, and now they're getting hit with standing water. You got to try to drain it off as best you can. As one professor called it, is get rid of the hillbilly lawn ornaments. That's the old tires, your old buckets laying out there. When you bring the horse in from the pasture at night to the stalls, dump the water buckets in the pasture, turn them upside down, and then refill them in the morning so that you don't have that standing water with the surface allowing the mosquito larvae to breed. Put them in the stall at night because that's when the mosquitoes are going to feed the most, as we all know. I mean, granted, here in Florida, they feed during the days too, but... And then, of course, you can put a fan on them in the stalls because mosquitoes are very lightweight. They can't fly against even a low speed on your box fans. And then some of the ceiling fans would work just fine for the mosquitoes. And then, of course, you can use there are mosquito repellents out to use on your horse. I haven't found a good one out there yet. I don't know if you guys have seen a good one. And then I have two clients in the swamp area.
We have the magic repellent. Jennifer came up with it the other day. Remember?
Yeah.
She makes catnip tea.
Catnip.
Just catnip, like you'd give it to the cat. And, you buy it in little bags, and then she makes brews of tea out of it, and it does work incredibly well for keeping mosquitoes off. Not flies, but the mosquitoes.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there was another product, and I can't remember the name of it, but it ran off of, I want to say, either diesel or gasoline, and created a sound that... kept the mosquitoes away, and they would put it at the end of their barns, two barns that were in the swamp, as we call it here in Florida. It's a real swampy area that provides most of the water for the aquifer, and they had it at the end of the barn, and that way they themselves could be out in the barn at night and not get bit by mosquitoes, because you do have to worry about if a horse got bit by a mosquito and gets West Nile in your area. Granted, there's more mosquitoes out there that will bite you and give you West Nile as well.
Let me ask you that, because there's no vaccine
for humans.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. Now, there are apparently over 1,000 cases in the United States this year of humans with West Nile, and so that's a big number. It's apparently worse than most years. And there's really nothing, from what I understand, if we get West Nile, we get sick for a week to 2 weeks. Is that?
Yeah, and there are some people who have residual effects of it, the neurologic, the weak limb, some memory loss or deficits in the nervous system. So, yeah, there are some residual things in the humans, too. So it's very paramount that you need to protect yourself with mosquito repellents. And then, again, back to dumping your water. I know it sounds like a pain. I got to dump my big water trough every night. But it will help with decreasing your mosquito population. I know a couple people that would go fishing here in Florida at night, and they use those thermocells, and they wear them around their neck, and they would definitely keep the mosquitoes off of them while they're fishing at night.
Isn't it ironic, Jamie, that we posted that picture of the alligator in somebody's back, near the barn, sitting in the water in Wellington near their house because they just had flooding, and they're more likely to get bit by a rabid mosquito than that alligator?
It is a little weird.
It is. Now, I want to tell you, the only thing that I found up here, Dr. Jones, that works, and I'm pretty sure they probably have it in Florida, is the mosquito halt. That is the only repellent, fly repellent for horses that I found actually works. I don't know how long it works because I spray the horses and then I, you know, leave them alone for the evening. But for the most part, that seems to be a little bit more helpful. That and they all wear fly sheets. But now I'm going to try the fans. I'm going to go get fans and put them on the horses because I have to leave my horses in at night because the mosquitoes are so bad in the pastures at night, but they're fine during the day, that all my horses are sun bleached from having to be outside during the day in Arizona.
Yeah, and that's a problem that the show horses people hate. But for their bug reasons and their health of the horse, that's what you kind of have to deal with, I hate to say. So, yeah. And you brought up a fly sheet. That's another good thing. A bug sheet is definitely helpful.
Yeah, yeah. It's except for when they scratch their butt on the fence and rip their fly sheet, because those things are so wimpy. They don't set up for butt rubbing or rolling or any of that stuff. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
But you can easily Google mosquito repellent, and they come up with a bunch of different types. There's some that are organic and some that are not, you know. And you got, I don't know, I couldn't really say that the organic ones work or don't work, but I do know that those little gasoline-charged, it was like it emitted sounds or whatever. I can't think of the name. It wasn't the fogger, but it was something similar to that. It did a really good job of repelling it. Kind of like the thermocell that the guys wear when they go fishing, or the women wear when they go fishing.
Okay.
I'm telling you, catnip.
Catnip. I'll have to try it. So on thehorse.com, we have a live event talking about mosquito-borne disease. It's tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can submit your questions now. We've received more than 200 questions, lots about West Nile. We're going to have Dr. Craig Barnett from Merck is going to be with us, and also Dr. Gary Magdesian from UC Davis to talk about mosquito-borne disease and lots of information on West Nile virus during that hour. So tune in if you want to learn more. There's a lot to cover, more than we could get to today.
Very
fantastic.
Good. Well, thank you. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. And
we'll
talk to you again next week.
All right. Take care.
And well, let's mention
it's
FloridaEquine.com. FloridaEquine.com is Dr. Jones' website.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Dr.
Jones. Absolutely.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, and you know what? Jamie just asked, where do you get catnip? You can find it at, like, PetSmart has catnip because they sell it for your cats in little bags.
So you brew it like a tea and then spray that?
Yep, and she puts that in the sprayer. And, you know, you might want to sift it out, you know, put it through a piece of cloth or something to sift it out. And then she puts it in the sprayer and sprays that, and it's done better than any fly spray we've found for mosquitoes. Now, as I said, it doesn't help with flies much. But for us, it's perfect because we don't have many flies, but we have tons of mosquitoes.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if it makes any difference at all, but when I brew it, I also add alcohol to the hot water. You can use vodka, or I just use rubbing alcohol because that's what I've got around. Because the research I read, it didn't tell you whether or not the active stuff that makes it repel was water-soluble or alcohol-soluble. So I was doing a CYA, so it's water plus alcohol. Brew, sprayer, done.
Any oil that you put in there to keep it on the skin?
Nothing at all. Just spray it on.
No, but it makes the neighborhood stray cats really happy, Jamie. They're all just
spraying. Maybe that's why the foxes have been hanging around, Glenn. Maybe it has an effect on them. We've been seeing the foxes all the time.
How many new cats do we have around your house? You come out there, there's a cat laying on your horse's back. It's like, it's mine.
I got this one. Hey, the
I got it.
There is a, when we lived in Lexington, we lived 2 miles from one of the most beautiful farms that there is in Lexington, and that's Vinery. And it's Vinery Farms, the whole thoroughbred operation's up for sale. There you go, Jamie. I'm sure you could get it for a steal. There's 3 farms involved, one in New York, one here down here in Florida, and one in Kentucky. You could probably pick that up, $100.
All of them?
Yeah, he's selling his whole operation. According to the statement released Tuesday by Tom Lutt, Vinery owner Tom Simmon, after meetings with his family and taking into account their plans and interests, has put the whole U.S. division up for sale. No listing price has been released. 440 acres in Kentucky, and it's absolutely beautiful.
And then you got one in Florida and New York. Let me see, I'm reading here. It includes all of the stallion, broodmare, boarding, rehab, and sales prep facilities. So let me ask you this. They have stallions there. The names, More Than Ready, Congrats, Pure Prize, Limehouse, Pioneer of the Nile, Kodiak Cowboy, and Street Hero. Do the stallions come with it, the operation? Do the mares come with the operation?
I think he wants to sell the whole thing, the whole operation, because that's the way it sounds. They're selling the whole operation. So you just walk in, take over. Yeah, there you go. I told you, you could pick it up for a couple hundred bucks, probably.
I'll take two.
Hey, there was something that we did a little while back, and I wanted to bring it up today because they made an announcement about it over the week. The Kentucky Horse Council, if you'll remember right, last year over the summer, there were so many natural disasters and so many things that had happened that we did a fundraiser for the Equine Disaster Relief Fund that the Kentucky Horse Council had put together to help horse owners. Well, they used a lot of that money around the country and then used more of it during the massive tornadoes that we had last year in Kentucky. Well, they've decided to take the $5,000 that was left, and they have actually given it to the United States Equestrian Federation's Equine Disaster Relief Fund, which helps and aids disaster victims all across the country. And they've started a smaller now fund just for Kentucky that the Kentucky Horse Council will administer. They were finding it was too hard logistically for the short staff that they have to help all of these different places around the country. So they turned that over to the USEF to administer, and now they're going to run a much smaller fund just for Kentucky residents. But that was some of your money that the listeners helped put in that was still being used up right up until today for relief in the Midwest and all over the country. So thank you for that.
Wow. That's a great organization there. I mean, just unbelievable. And obviously, you know, thank you for volunteering the Red Cross. I'm sure, you know, it's potential you could be called into action here soon. Hopefully not. But, I mean, you're in Florida now, and it's hitting Florida. So how far are you from the Gulf Coast?
We're right in the middle of the state. Ocala sits right in the middle of the state, so we're about 45 minutes from the Gulf, and we're about an hour from the ocean. From Daytona Beach takes us about an hour to get to. So we're right in the middle, which means that usually when the storms get to us, they're a little weakened. You know, you'll get a lot of rain and a little bit of wind, but not the severe stuff that they're seeing right now in New Orleans.
Wow. Well, you know, my gosh. Again, thanks for volunteering. But again, thanks to the Horse Council for, and all our listeners who donated to it. So maybe we'll do that again this year. Hopefully we won't have to, but the Equine Disaster Relief Fund is a great organization. You can check it out on KentuckyHorse.org/disaster-relief.
All right, and if you don't mind, I'm going to go now because I have to sign up at twinspires.com, and I have to get my $146 donated to them because I am going to win $500,000 just by playing names today.
Yeah, good luck with that. You know what? Probably, with your luck, you'll probably win. Let me know who you pick. I'll bet on them, too.
We'll see, everybody. We'll be back on Friday. Send your ads. Really bad ads.
Stay neuter and guilt, people. See you Friday.
Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com. Really badass. See you Friday.